I would like to ask that you would be in prayer for me as I stand before you for just a while this morning. As you probably have guessed from the texts that I've been sending out, the conscience is still on my mind. And some of them probably were repeats, which is okay. You know, when I pray before a service, or most of the time, I pray that the Lord would bless me to be able to preach, to feed the sheep of God and the lambs. And I also pray that it would be glorifying to His name and edifying to the church. And it just hit me that if it's not glorifying to God, it won't edify the church. It won't feed the sheep. If it's anything other than glorifying God, the church will starve to death. No matter who the preacher is or where the church is. So this morning, I'd like to speak to you about how we conduct our lives according to our conscience. What if my conscience and your conscience don't coincide? What if things are okay for me in my mind, but they're not okay in your mind? No matter what it is. The word that comes to mind, or the phrase that comes to mind, is Christian liberty. It means that we're not being judged or guided by the same value system. When my and your conscience don't jihad together. Y'all, if y'all are plowed with mules, you know what that means. And it all comes down to what we know, what we regard, or what we acknowledge. Y'all got that? It comes down to what we know or what we acknowledge or regard. The Apostle Paul deals with this specifically in two letters. One of them is 1 Corinthians, and the other one is Romans, to the church at Rome. Both churches had a mixture of Jews and Gentiles. Especially Corinth had a lot of different cultures represented. Not just Jews and Gentiles, but a bunch of different kind of Gentiles that may regard different things. Now, chapter 8, 1 Corinthians. The Apostle Paul starts out, says, "Now as touching things offered unto idols." We know that we all have knowledge. Get this. Paul begins this exposition on things offered to idols. Listen to what he says first. We know that we all have knowledge. And then he says, we know a lot of stuff. We all have knowledge. Knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. Paul is setting the tone for how we conduct our lives as we have concourse with each other in a church way, but maybe not just in a church way, but certainly in a church way. And if any man think that he knoweth anything, he knoweth nothing yet as he ought to. What he's saying is, if a man declares himself to have more perfect knowledge than somebody else and judge them according to how much he knows, all that is puffing him up, and he hasn't arrived at charity yet. He hasn't arrived with the godly type of attitude that he needs with concourse in a church, with other people in a church way. And maybe not, probably not just a church way. He's arrogant. He's egotistical. He's demeaning. He's got, you know, a person that says, I know more than you. You're deplorable. The things you do are putrid to me. Is setting himself up as the judge, jury, and sometimes executioner. He's it. Hey, but Paul says, that man knows nothing at all of Christian liberty. He hasn't studied Christ and how he conducted his life and how he instructed us to do ours. He knoweth nothing yet as he ought to know. But if any man love God, the same is known of him. So that's Paul's preface. Then in verse 4 he says, as concerning therefore the eating of those things that are offered in sacrifice unto idols, we know that an idol is nothing. Nothing in the world. And that there is none other God but one. For though there be that are called gods, whether in heaven or in earth, as there be gods many and lords many. He says there's a lot of people that are out there worshiping many gods. He says, but to us, there is but one God, the Father of whom are all things, and we in Him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we by Him. So what does Paul take you back to? What does he take them back to? He takes them, as he always does when he establishes some kind of principle, he always takes it back to the creation of the world. That God is above all. He has all preeminence and we're in Him. He doesn't philander on that, does he? Every time Paul makes a statement, he goes all the way back to creation. If you start looking for that, you'll find it everywhere in Paul's writings. And Peter's too. He says, howbeit, there is not in every man that knowledge. He's not talking about heathen men. We know they don't have knowledge of the one God. He's not talking about a wicked person out there. They don't have that they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, and they're without it. Okay? Now, he's talking in this context, he's talking to the church about those that are conscience of an idol, and if they're conscience of an idol, then they really haven't got to the place that where they understand that an idol is nothing in the world. They still consider it something. No matter how little, they consider it something, that it has some kind of influence or something over the meat that they're going to eat. Because they were converted from heathenism, from polytheism, to Christianity. Just imagine if somebody tried to convert you from being an old Baptist. How hard would that be?
Right.
How hard would that be to change your mind about the sovereignty and preeminence of God? If it were true, of course, converting someone away from that would not be true. But just think about how hard it would change your, it would take to be to change your mind. That's where these people are. These people have been converted from heathenism, polytheism, where there's many gods, idol worship, offering things in sacrifice to idols to serve the true and the living God, and yet they retain some of that, some kind of way, some kind of regard for something from their past life that an idol has something, maybe, it's hard for them to let go of. Not that they worship those things, but they just haven't quite got to the point where they think that they're nothing in the world. He says, howbeit there is not in every man that knowledge, for some with conscience or knowledge of the idol unto this hour eat it as a thing offered unto an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. So here we see that though they've been converted to Christianity from idol worship, they still think that an idol has some kind of effect over food. And they've got two consciences now that are working against one another. And them as followers of Christ, they've gotten to the point where they're more in line with Christ, and yet they still have some kind of regard for this idol. And then, so if they eat it, if they eat the thing and are influenced to eat it and are worried about if they don't eat it, that the idol might not be appeased. Do y'all see that? And so their conscience is defiled whether they eat or whether they don't. Either way, it's defiled. So they halt, Paul says, between two opinions. They have one opinion of Christ and one opinion, they still have an opinion in regard to an idol at some level. So their conscience is weak. It's a weak conscience. And it's defiled when they eat things. Paul says, just because they have that conscience doesn't mean that it changes the truth of the matter. He says, but meat commendeth us not to God. For neither, if we eat it, are we the better. Neither, if we eat not, are we the worse. Paul's saying, either way, whether you eating it is not going to get you to heaven, and not eat it, not eating it is not going to get you there either. If you're on the other side and you believe that the idol is something and regarding it, looking at somebody else and saying, if you eat it, it's not going to send you to hell and it's not going to keep you out. Either way, do y'all follow me in that? Paul's saying that it's meat's nothing. An idol is nothing. Whether you regard something offered to an idol as something, it's nothing. But their conscience, they're still aware of it, self-aware, remember? They still regard it. Paul says, in reality, it's nothing. Paul gives his advice and admonition, more than advice. But take heed, lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to them that are weak. Is it okay to eat things offered to idols? Paul says, yeah, because idols aren't anything. They don't matter. They're nothing. And if you want to eat something offered to an idol, it's not going to hurt you a bit. It's not going to get you to heaven. It's not going to send you to hell. Either way. But it could become a stumbling block to a brother that has a weak conscience. Now, he says, here's his example. For if any man see thee which hast knowledge, so they know that you have knowledge. They know that you know that there's one God, and that's it. You don't regard an idol. Your conscience is not weak about it. You're not wishy-washy. Your conscience isn't wishy-washy. But if any man see thee, which has knowledge, sit at meat in the idol's temple, shall not the conscience of him which is weak be emboldened to eat those things which are offered to idols? And through thy knowledge, get this, through thy knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. He doesn't put this on the weak brother to get more knowledge like you got. He puts this on the man that has knowledge to not just exercise knowledge for the sake of knowledge, because knowledge puffs up, but the whole issue is charity. You see, Paul, he deals with both parties now, but to the one that has knowledge and his faith is not weak, he says, if you go in there and say, I don't care who thinks it, I'm going to do what I'm going to do and let the chips fall where they may. They're just without knowledge over there. They're ignorant people. They're ignorant. I'm just going to do it anyway because an idol is nothing. Paul says, that is not the right attitude. When you have that attitude, you cause a weak brother to perish. How are we supposed to conduct our lives? Is it all about you? Is it all about me? If it is, you're probably causing a weak brother or sister or maybe a child, to perish and suffer. You're wounding their conscience and causing a stumbling block in their walk with Christ. Paul says, he doesn't stop there. Not only do you cause that weak brother perish through your knowledge, Paul makes it tougher. But when ye sin so against the brethren, Paul says that is a sin to have that attitude and to conduct your life that way. When ye sin so against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, not only do you sin against that brother, but he says, ye sin against Christ. That's pretty strong. No, that's not pretty strong. That's as strong as it gets. Should we have this attitude as we conduct our lives? Dismissing somebody as being ignorant when they don't have the knowledge that you've got? Or are you charitable? Paul says, wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. Now, he keeps on going with this. That's the whole issue, is what you're doing a stumbling block to them that are weak. But he keeps going with this. In chapter 10, turn over a turn over a page to chapter 10. I'm going to skip chapter 9. He talks about some more stuff. He says in verse 4, we'll pick it up in verse 14. He says, wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. That means run away from that. He's not just saying, okay, whatever they think, we're just going to go with it. And he said, no, we're going to continue to lovingly and charitably help them gain knowledge a little at a time. We're going to teach them a better way. He says, flee from idolatry. Run away from it. I speak as the wise men, judge ye what I say. The cup of blessing. He puts this out there for them to judge. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we, being many, are one bread and one body, for we are all partakers of that one bread. But behold, Israel after the flesh, are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers with the altar? Who's he talking to now? Is he talking to the strong brother, or is he talking to the weak brother? He's talking to both. But here he is. He says, if you're going to be concerned with things that are offered to idols, and you think that they're anything in the world, I'm going to help you understand why you ought not to eat those things in sacrifice to idols. Behold, Israel after the flesh, are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? What say I then, that the idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is anything? No. It's not. I'm going to answer it for him because it was a rhetorical question. But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God. And I would not that you should have fellowship with devils. He's saying, it doesn't matter if you eat that thing offered to idols, having regard to God as being the one God. He said, but I want you to know that wherever you sit down to eat, you're a partaker with that. And Paul says, at some level, if you're a weak brother and you still have regard to an idol, when you sit down and regard it that way, you're partaking in that idol worship. Because you regard it. He says, I would not that ye have fellowship with devils. Ye cannot drink of the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. Ye cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and the table of devils. Again, this is not talking about what you put in your mouth. This is talking about what you got in your mind. Your knowledge. Do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than He? Why do you think He put that in there? That don't seem to fit, does it? It's kind of strange, don't it? If you're a follower of God, and you sit down at the devil's table, are you so brazen to stir up the jealousy of God on purpose? Do you think you're stronger than Him and can overcome that? That's why I put it in there. Paul makes a statement here that I want us to fully understand. He repeats this several times. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. So what do you think that Paul's purpose is? Judging whether it's right or not? Or judging whether it's going to build somebody up or not? Paul says, if you want to eat something to an idol, go ahead. But if it's going to destroy somebody, don't do it. Now, he says, let no man seek his own, but another man, but every man another's wealth. He's not talking about money there. He's talking about well-being. And then he says, whatsoever is sold in the shambles, that eat, asking no question for conscience' sake. Now, what's a shamble? Y'all probably said shambles before. Do you have it, said, ooh, his life's in shambles? You've heard that term. I don't know what, that doesn't really fit this context, really. But a shamble is a meat market. That's all it is. It's a table at a meat market where meat was displayed. That's all it is. But I want you to understand that the shambles was where they would take these animals that had been sacrificed to idols. You know, when they sacrificed an animal, they killed it for the idol. And then after they killed it, then they took it to the butcher. And the butcher bought it from him at a lower price, I guess. And he resold it to somebody else. That's what a shamble is. It's just a meat market. Paul says, whatsoever is sold in the shambles, that eat, asking no question for conscience sake. And listen to his justification for this. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. All things God has cleansed. It's okay for you to eat catfish if you're a Jew. It's okay for you. You know, they weren't supposed to eat fish that didn't have scales. I mean, that's pretty particular. That's why Peter said, nothing common or unclean has ever entered into my mouth. God said, call not that thou common that which I've cleansed. Arise, Peter, slay and eat. He told him three times. And then Peter understood what God meant by that. He wasn't just talking about things that are going into his mouth. He was talking about people. Don't regard somebody lower than you, because if I've cleansed them, they're just as good as you are. And Paul is saying this here, talking about people degrading other people because of things that they ate. He says, if you want to eat it and it's sold into shambles, don't you ask any questions. Don't worry about it, because an idol's nothing. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. There's plenty of food. God is just rich in His bounty in this earth. If any of them that believe not, now he's talking about a heathen man. If any of them that believe not bid you to a feast. That's like somebody asking you over for dinner. And you know that they're not a believer. This is another specific case that Paul goes into to help us understand how we're supposed to conduct ourselves. If any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, and ye be disposed to go. That means you want to go. You've decided to go. You desire to go. He says, whatsoever is set before you, eat. Asking no question for conscience sake. Why? Because an idol is nothing. An idol is nothing. Don't ask questions. Is this offered to idols? No. Eat it. But here's another consideration. Another thing to consider. But if any man say unto you, this is offered in sacrifice unto idols, eat not for his sake that showed it. And for conscience sake, listen to his justification, for the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Same justification. Paul is saying, when you go to this feast, don't ask a question about where the food's coming from, because it don't really matter. But if the man that believes not says, what we've got here is something that's offered to an idol, then you don't eat it because of his conscience, not yours. He says, conscience I say, for the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, conscience I say, not thine own. Because you know it's nothing. You know an idol is nothing, and things offered to idols don't matter. Meats don't commend you to God, and they don't get you to heaven to keep you from hell. Or send you to hell. Or keep you out. He says, conscience I say, not thine own, but the other. For why is my liberty judged of another man's conscience? what Paul is saying. You have Christian liberty, yes. Eating that doesn't matter. But why in the world would you want to subject your liberty so that that man can go out and say, Paul Blair ate things offered to idols and spread that everywhere out in the country? Why would you subject yourself to that? Because you'd be wishy-washy in his mind, not in yours. He'd say, well, that boy, and I guarantee you, people will say all manner of things against you. You ever had that happen to you? Where you think it don't matter? Nobody will say nothing? They will. Why would you subject yourself to that? Paul says. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. There's plenty of things out there to eat. You're not starving to death so that you have to eat the things that's offered to this idol. Same justification. There's plenty of bounty out there for you to eat. Why is my liberty judged of another man's conscience? For if I by grace be a partaker, why am I evil spoken of for that which I give thanks? He says, and now whether this is talking about a heathen man, an idol worshiper, or whether this is talking about a weak brother, seeing you sit at meat to this thing offered to idols. Or if at this feast there's one of your weak brethren let's say you're a Gentile and you understand that meat's nothing, and a Jew comes up and says, I can't eat that. That's offered to idols. You don't do it. Paul says in verse 31, whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God, not to the furtherance of your Christian liberty. Not as a bulldozer just because it's right or lawful. Let me say it like that. Not just because it's lawful. Because it may not be expedient. Give none offense, neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church of God. He's saying, don't offend the church. He's saying, don't offend God, don't offend the Jews or the Gentiles or the church of God. Even as I please all men in all things, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Saved from what? Saved from having their weak conscience defiled? Saving them from perishing? The weak brother from perishing? Saving them from a lot of problems in this life? You're not saving them from hell to heaven. Meat don't get you there or keep you from going anyway. Now Paul deals with it a little bit different in Romans chapter 14. And this touches a lot of things. Him... Well, the church of Rome also had Jews and Gentiles in it. Two totally different cultures, two totally different backgrounds, and probably more than two, but certainly at least two. You had those that had been converted from heathenism or polytheism, worshiping many gods, idol worship. Paul starts it out. Him that is weak in the faith, receive ye. You remember that reception, don't you? It means to take by the hand, to be a companion with, to take them up, accompany them. He says, you accompany them, but not to doubtful disputations. That means to judge them harshly. That means that you don't take them up for the purpose of bringing judgment upon them. You don't call them aside and say, come here, let me talk to you for a minute. You know, when you were sitting down eating over there, you ought not to have done that. You're just not part of this church anymore. You know, I've seen that in reality. Paul says, don't do that. Him that is weak in the faith, receive ye, but not to doubtful disputations. Paul is not saying it's great that they're weak. Paul wants them to grow. He wants them to become strong. But just like the mind of Christ was, he said, a bruised reed shall he not break. In Isaiah, it was prophesied of him, a smoking flax shall he not quench. Jesus is not going to bruise or break the one that's bruised. He's going to bind it up and he's going to heal them. He's not just going to cut them off and break them. You got that? He's not going to take the feeble, the feeble knees. What are we supposed to do to people that have feeble knees? We supposed to cut them off at the knees? Are we supposed to strengthen them? What are we supposed to do to the hands that hang down? Are we supposed to put heavier burdens on them to bear? Are we supposed to lift them up? We're supposed to lift them up. How many times have I seen feeble knees cut instead of strengthened? Just in my short life, in the church, where it ought not to happen. Him that is weak in the faith, receive ye, but not to doubtful disputations. That weak in the faith means sick or feeble. For one believeth that he may eat all things. So we got one person believes he can eat all things, which is true. I don't know why you'd want to eat a skunk or something like that, but it's okay. It's not going to keep. That eateth all things, another who is weak eateth herbs. That means he doesn't eat meat. He's a vegetarian. Eateth herbs. Let not him that eateth despise him that eateth not. And let not him which eateth not judge him that eateth. Do you see? Paul's dealing with both sides of this equation. With both with both parties. He's saying, if you can eat, if you're a meat eater, don't despise a vegetarian, and a vegetarian ought not to judge a meat eater. He's dealing with both parties. Nor let him which eateth not judge him that eateth, for God hath received him. Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? Y'all get that? Y'all see this picture, because This is an example that Paul gives from something that these people fully understood. They had servants. I mean, real servants in their house. Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? To his own master he standeth or falleth. Don't tell him how to live his life. Don't tell him not just live his life, not living his life. Don't tell him how to serve his master. Or that he's serving his master wrongly in the things that he's eating or not eating. Because meat don't commend you to God anyway. Or the lack of it. To his own master he standeth or falleth. Yea, he shall be holding up, for God is able to make him stand. One man, now here's another question he's got. Or another situation. One man esteemeth one day above another, another esteemeth every man every day alike. Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. In his own mind. His own conscience. Let him be fully persuaded. He that regardeth the day. See, we're talking about regarding things. Acknowledging things. He that regardeth the day regardeth it unto the Lord. And that he that regardeth not the day to the Lord, he doth not regard it. He that eateth to the Lord, for he giveth God thanks. And he that eateth not to the Lord, he eateth not and giveth God thanks. For none of us liveth to himself, and no man died to himself. Do you see a common theme throughout these examples? Do you see a common theme? The common theme is whether you eat or whether you don't, you do it to the Lord. Whether you regard one day above another one or whether you regard all days the same, you regard it to the Lord and you don't regard it because of the Lord. You see, that's the common theme. This is not talking about everybody in the world and whatever they think. This is talking about, in a church way, somebody really is persuaded in their mind that they are serving their master by regarding a day. That's okay. Paul says, if they eat things that are meat and eat all things, they eat it to the Lord, they give Him thanks, and it's okay. It's not a matter of fellowship if somebody eats meat as opposed to somebody that's a vegetarian. It doesn't matter. Paul says, if they regard it or regard it not to the Lord and they give Him thanks, that's what matters. For none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. For whether we live unto the Lord, and whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore die, we are the Lord's. For to this end both Christ both died and rose and revived, that he might be the Lord both of the dead and the living. But why dost thou judge thy brother? You see, ultimately this is where we're going, isn't it? When you have a conscience and you're somebody else's conscience doesn't jihad with yours, this ultimately is going to end up in a judgment somewhere, isn't it? Why dost thou judge thy brother, or why dost thou set at naught thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And who's going to judge another man's servant? Not you. It's God. So, it's not up to you. You worry about you. Let them, and your servanthood to your master, let them worry about their serving theirs. You know, this is very real to me. I know I've had some private that I didn't know about. I know some people didn't agree with me going to Africa. This is just another example. I know that several of one particular, but a bunch of others in secret that didn't think that it was good for me to go to Africa. But the issue is not whether it was right or not. They were judging another servant on how he served his master. And I would say to my own master, I stand or fall. I believe it was right. And if it was right, I'll stand. And if it wasn't right, I'll fall to that master. You see, because they weren't the ones that called me to go. God called me to go. Therefore, it didn't bother me what they said. Because I'm not serving them. I'm serving what I believe to be God's direction in my life. Through much prayer and fear, to be quite honest. I don't want to get too personal. Why dost thou judge thy brother? In verse 10. Or why dost thou set at naught thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. For it is written, as I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then every one of us shall give account of himself to me. Is that what that says? No. To you? No. To God. Everyone's going to give an account to God. Let us not therefore judge one another anymore, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block. There's that word again. That must be pretty important. That no man put a stumbling block or occasion to fall in his brother's way. I know and am persuaded by the Lord Jesus that there is nothing unclean of itself. There you go. It's lawful to eat something. It's lawful to eat whatever you want to eat. If you want to eat a bug off the windshield of the car, do it. It's not going to get you to heaven or it ain't going to send you to hell. Ain't going to keep you from being in either place. But to him that esteemeth anything to be unclean, to him it is unclean. But if thy brother be grieved with thy meat. Here we go again. If thy brother be grieved with thy meat, now walkest thou not charitably. Destroy not him with thy meat for whom Christ died. He repeats that, didn't he? He said it again in Corinthians. Let not then your good be evil spoken of. Why am I judged? Why is my liberty judged by another man's conscience? This is another way of saying that. Why is my good be evil spoken of? For the kingdom of God is not meat and drink, but righteousness and peace and joy in the Holy Ghost. For he that in these things serveth Christ is acceptable to God and approved of men. Isn't that what we all want? To be acceptable to God and approved of men? This is how you do it. This is how you do it. Let us therefore follow after the things which make for peace and the things wherewith one may edify one another, building up, not tearing down. For meat destroy not the work of God. Hallelujah. All things indeed are pure, but it is evil for that man who eateth with offense. It is good neither to eat flesh, nor to drink wine, nor anything whereby thy brother stumbleth, or is offended, or is made weak. Hast thou faith? have it to thyself before God. What Paul is saying is, you can't let somebody else's life dictate yours. And you can't let somebody's weak conscience dictate your strong one. If you have, let's say, if you'd like to have a glass of wine or something with supper or wherever, but that other people think that you're going to bust the doors of hell wide open if you take a sip, don't do it in front of them. Have it thy faith to thyself in private. Don't cause that weak brother to perish or to speak evil of your liberty. That's exactly what Paul is saying right here. Hast thou faith? Have it to thyself before God. Happy is he that condemneth not himself in the thing which he alloweth. He's saying, if you do that that you allow in front of somebody else and they condemn you for it, that's not going to make you happy. But you will be happy if you're not condemned in that thing which you allow. And he that doubteth is damned if he eat, because he eateth not of faith, for whatsoever is not of faith is sin. Y'all see that? So you could sin against a brother by causing their weak conscience to be defiled, and you could help their perishing, and you could sin that way. You could sin by, if you were a weak brother, by not understanding and being persuaded to eat something that you thought might be offered to an idol, and it might, and if you didn't eat it of faith, it would be sin. It'd be sin from both directions. Y'all see that? The whole thing is to don't put a stumbling block up against your brother. Edify. Build him up. Don't tear him down. May God bless you. To edify one another and to be aware if you are causing a stumbling block that causes a weak brother to perish, stop it. Stop it. Check your attitude at the door. No. Don't check your attitude at the door. Check your attitude with Jesus Christ. May God bless you is my prayer. Doors of the church are open for reception of members. Should any have that desire to be like-minded with Christ, I pray that you all live in all good conscience this week.